Imagine you hand a 35-year-old a winning lottery ticket, right? Something worth $500,000 every single year.
Okay, yeah. That sounds like a pretty ideal situation.
You would think so. But imagine checking back a decade later only to discover they are practically broke.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is jarring.
Right, you would assume some massive, catastrophic failure in judgment occurred. But today, we are taking a deep dive into the paradox of sudden wealth. We really want to unpack the psychological and, well, the mathematical realities of the most dangerous financial transition in a professional's life.
Which is that leap from grueling training or, junior roles straight into your peak earning years.
Exactly. And more importantly, for you listening, we are going to explore how to actually build an automated wealth system, a system that turns a high-stress career from a lifelong obligation into a choice.
It is a fascinating paradox, honestly, because the outcome you just described, the whole being broke a decade later thing, it has absolutely nothing to do with a lack of intelligence or even basic financial literacy.
Right, we are talking about highly specialized, brilliant people here.
Exactly. The failure really comes down to a fatal flaw in human timing. The moment of maximum income growth typically arrives before any sort of automated saving system is in place. And, I mean, nature abhors a vacuum. So spending simply expands to fill the void.
It just naturally fills up the space. So to make this abstract concept a bit more tangible for us, we are going to follow a real-world case study throughout our discussion today.
I love doing this. It really grounds the numbers.
Yeah, it helps so much. So let's look at the profile of a 35-year-old cardiologist. We will call him Dr. John Lee. He is married, has one child, lives in a major city in Texas.
Okay, so relatively high cost of living, depending on the city.
Exactly. And he is just stepping out of his fellowship training into his first year as a fully credentialed attending physician. And the numbers on this transition, they are staggering.
They really are. It is a massive jump.
He is going from a fellowship take-home pay of roughly $4,700 a month to an attending take-home of nearly $25,800 a month.
Right. I mean, that is an entirely different financial universe. And this is precisely where traditional, highly restrictive budgeting advice just completely falls apart.
Because it just doesn't scale.
Because financial systems fail when they ignore human psychology.
Yeah.
You're dealing with a professional who has spent nearly a decade working 80-hour weeks. They've been delaying vacations, driving an unreliable car, constantly stressing over the cost of basic groceries.
Yeah, I often think of willpower as a physical muscle. Like, if you are running on 4 hours of sleep and making life or death clinical decisions for 7 years, your willpower muscle is completely fatigued.
It is clinically shot.
Right, it is shot. So by the time that first massive paycheck hits the bank account, the psychological pull to spend isn't some moral failing. It is a deeply predictable, deeply human response to prolonged deprivation. So if we know willpower is just out of the question here, what actually happens in those first few months?
Well, the professional steps directly into the first major trap of sudden wealth, and that is locking in recurring fixed costs.
Ah, right. Not just one-off purchases.
Exactly. A luxury apartment upgrade, private school tuition, or a country club membership. These are not one-time hits to the bank account. They lock in as massive monthly liabilities.
They just keep hitting you every single month.
Yeah. And if you add $6,000 in fixed monthly commitments in year one, you aren't just spending $72,000 that year. You are committing your future cash flow to bills that almost never shrink. It quietly drains your long-term compounding potential before it even begins.
But let me play the skeptic for a second here. Shouldn't high earners just be able to out-earn their spending habits through sheer volume of income?
You would think so, right?
Yeah, I mean, if Dr. Lee is bringing in over $450,000 a year in household income, surely he can afford a nicer apartment and a new SUV without tanking his future. There is so much money flowing in.
It looks that way on the surface. But if we zoom out and look at the timeline, the math simply doesn't support that assumption. Let's say Dr. Lee wants to retire at 60.
Okay, a pretty standard goal.
Right, but because of his extended medical training, he didn't start his real earning years until age 35. He only has 25 years for his money to compound.
Oh, wow. I never really factored that in.
Yeah, he does not have the standard 40-year horizon that someone entering the corporate workforce at 22 enjoys. His money has to work incredibly fast. And every single dollar committed to a fixed lifestyle cost is a dollar that isn't running the marathon for him.
So if willpower is unreliable because they are clinically exhausted and we establish they can't just out-earn the damage because of the lost time, How do they safely blow off steam without blowing up their net worth?
That is the million-dollar question, literally.
It seems like a system would require some sort of structural release valve, you know, something that safely absorbs that overwhelming human desire to finally enjoy the fruits of their labor while violently protecting the compounding engine.
Yes. And that brings us to the core mechanic we need to examine today, which is the 10% upgrade rule.
The 10% upgrade rule. Okay.
It is a brilliant piece of behavioral engineering. Basically, you calculate the net monthly income jump. So the new take-home pay minus the old take-home pay, and you allocate exactly 10% of that difference to a lifestyle buffer.
Okay, and the rest?
The remaining 90% is completely automated toward wealth building.
Let's run Dr. Lee's math on this to see how it feels in practice. His income jump is $21,100 a month.
Oh, right.
Under this rule, $2,100 a month goes into his lifestyle buffer. And the remaining $19,000 a month is swept away into investments and debt payoff before he ever even sees it in his checking account.
Exactly. But we need to be highly specific about what that 10% buffer is actually designed to do.
Right. It isn't just free money to burn on whatever.
No, not at all. That $2,100 isn't for a flashy luxury car lease. It is intended for outsourcing tasks to buy back time and investing in sleep and health infrastructure.
I see this buffer kind of like a pressure relief valve on an industrial steam engine. You have to let a controlled amount of steam out so the whole machine doesn't explode.
That is a perfect way to look at it.
Like getting a biweekly house cleaner, for example. Research consistently shows that using money to buy back time delivers incredible happiness returns.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Or investing in clinical-grade footwear and a premium mattress. When your career depends on your physical endurance, those aren't luxuries. They are career longevity investments.
Spot on.
Contrast that controlled release with what usually happens, which is the luxury car trap. A physician signs a $1,200 a month luxury lease on day 30 of their new job as a reward.
Because they feel like they earned it.
Exactly. But that single emotional decision bleeds the wealth engine for 3 years. The buffer allows for a reliable upgraded vehicle, but it mathematically prevents you from locking in a devastating recurring liability.
Okay, hold on. Let me inject a dose of brutal reality into this math for a second. What about childcare?
Yes, the big one.
If childcare costs $2,000 to $4,500 a month in a major city, which is incredibly common, that immediately vaporizes Dr. Lee's entire $2,100 buffer. How does this system handle unavoidable massive family costs? Does the whole steam engine just explode?
You are pointing out the messiest part of this entire transition. And honestly, childcare is the ultimate wrecking ball to any financial model. The system isn't magic, and it requires a specific operational sequence to handle this.
So how does the sequence work?
Well, if that childcare was already running during the fellowship, it continues to be paid from the baseline budget, and the new buffer is applied on top.
Okay, that makes sense.
However, if it's a brand new cost that begins in the attending year, it comes off the top of that massive $19,000 allocation first.
Oh, I see.
The fundamental principle of the 90% rule still holds, but the order of operations bends to respect the reality of family logistics.
That feels much more grounded. You fund the non-negotiable infrastructure first, and then you aggressively route the rest.
Precisely.
And routing that remaining 90%, that massive chunk of capital, is where the strategy really becomes a science. It cannot just sit in a checking account. It has to be funneled to dodge what is arguably the biggest predator of sudden wealth, which is federal tax liabilities.
The reality of the 35 to 37% federal tax bracket is unforgiving. Unprotected dollars are absolutely decimated before they can even begin to grow.
Yeah, that is a huge chunk of your income just gone.
Right. So that $19,000 monthly wealth engine must be routed through a highly specific structural priority stack to survive.
I constantly picture this phase like a high-stakes game of Tetris. You have these constantly falling blocks of income, and you have to drop them into the exact right pre-tax and tax-free buckets in the precise order.
That is a great visual.
Because if you put your money into a standard taxable account before maximizing your shelters, you leave a massive gap in your tax defenses that piles up and ruins the board.
That analogy perfectly captures the urgency and the mechanics. The sequence is everything here. Step one is pretty straightforward, the employer 401k or 403b up to the full match.
Right, because that is free money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is a guaranteed immediate return on your capital that you simply cannot replicate anywhere else in the financial markets. But step two is where people often get confused. It's the Family Health Savings Account, or HSA, maximizing it up to the $8,750 limit.
Let's pause right there on the HSA, because I think a lot of people misunderstand this particular block in the Tetris game.
Oh, almost everyone does.
Most of us think of an HSA as just a debit card to buy Band-Aids and pay for urgent care copays. How does the healthcare account function as a secret tax shelter?
Well, because of how the tax code is written, the HSA is arguably the single most powerful account available. It is triple tax advantaged.
Triple? Okay, break that down.
So the money goes in pre-tax, which lowers your current burden. Then it grows tax-free. And finally, if used for medical expenses, it comes out tax-free.
But wait, how does that help build long-term wealth if you're just spending it on doctor visits?
Ah, because the wealth-building secret is to never actually use the debit card.
Really? Never?
Never. Imagine you have a $1,000 medical bill. The traditional advice is to swipe your HSA card. The strategic move is to pay that $1,000 out of your normal checking account, save the receipt, and leave the $1,000 in the HSA invested in an index fund for 30 years.
Oh, wow.
It becomes a massive, completely tax-free retirement bucket. Mm. It is effectively a supercharged Roth IRA in disguise.
That is a phenomenal mechanic. So you are using your current cash flow to protect your future tax-free growth. Okay, after the match and the stealth HSA, what is the next move in the sequence?
Step three is the double backdoor Roth IRA, which accounts for $15,000 total for a married couple.
And we should probably clarify the backdoor mechanism here, right? Because
yeah.
High earners like Dr. Lee are legally locked out of making direct contributions to a Roth IRA.
Yes, exactly. Once your income crosses a certain threshold, the front door is closed. So you use the backdoor loophole. You just drop the funds into a traditional non-deductible IRA.
Because you've already paid taxes on that money.
Right. And since that money has already been taxed and you haven't given it time to grow and create new taxable gains, you instantly convert it to a Roth IRA.
Just flip it over immediately.
Yep. And from that moment on, all future growth and withdrawals are completely tax-free.
It is entirely legal, but it feels like a cheat code. So we have the match, the HSA, the backdoor Roth. What is next?
Step four is maxing out the rest of the 401k to the $24,500 limit. Just completing that one step saves over $8,500 in federal taxes alone for someone in Dr. Lee's bracket.
That is massive.
It is. And finally, step five is a really unique vehicle, the 457b plan.
I see the 457b mentioned in medical finance circles frequently. It seems to be a sort of hidden trapdoor for extra capital. Why is this account so critical for this specific demographic?
Well, most people assume the 401k cap is a hard stop for pre-tax retirement savings. But a 457b is technically a deferred compensation plan offered by state and local governments and many hospitals.
So it's a totally different classification.
Exactly. It has its own completely separate contribution limit. That means a physician can shelter another massive chunk of income from that punishing marginal tax rate, effectively doubling their pre-tax retirement space.
Okay, so consider the alternative scenario for a moment. What happens if Dr. Lee just waits?
He does nothing.
Yeah, let's say he looks at this intense Tetris game and says, you know what? I have been broke for a decade. I just want to enjoy my money for a couple of years before I start optimizing my tax brackets.
That hesitation leads directly to trap number two, which is the devastating cost of a delayed start. If Dr. Lee waits just 2 years to start this automated system, it costs him roughly $520,000 in lost portfolio value by age 60.
Over $500,000 for a two-year break.
Yes. And if he waits 4 years, the shortfall expands to $965,000.
Almost $1 million lost just for waiting 4 years. Let's unpack the math on that, because 4 years of contributions at $19,000 a month does not equal $1 million.
Right. The gap isn't just the missed principal. Think of compounding like a snowball rolling down a massive mountain. Those first 2 years are the snow gathered at the very peak.
The snow that has the longest time to roll.
Exactly. If you start your snowball halfway down the mountain, it simply doesn't have enough distance to become an avalanche, no matter how much extra snow you pack onto it later.
That makes total sense.
You are losing the compounding on the contributions and the compounding on the compounding over the next two decades. You cannot simply write a bigger check at age 50 to buy back the time you lost at age 35.
Time is the one asset you can never out-earn. So the tax shelters are building the future, pushing the snowball down the mountain. But we have to address the baggage pulling that future backward. The 90% engine has to simultaneously attack past debts to maximize long-term velocity.
Which brings us to trap number three, compounding student debt.
The big one.
Dr. Lee has a typical balance for his field, which is $244,000 at a 6.6% interest rate.
Ouch.
Yeah. That loan is generating $1,342 in pure interest every single month. Minimum income-driven repayment plans just let this bleed out over decades. It acts as a permanent drag on wealth creation.
I always view a 6.6% loan as a reverse investment. It is a guaranteed risk-free negative return on your money.
That is exactly what it is.
But let me play devil's advocate on the strategy here. If we are living in an economic environment with high inflation, wouldn't it make more sense mathematically to just pay the bare minimums forever?
The inflation argument.
Yeah, the theory is that you let inflation slowly eat away the real value of the debt and invest your massive surplus in the market instead. Why go on an aggressive sprint to zero?
That is a very common theoretical debate. And the mathematical argument for holding debt during high inflation is sound on paper. But human beings do not live in spreadsheets.
Why? They don't.
They live in a world of cash flow anxiety and behavioral fatigue. By refinancing to a lower rate, say 4.85%, and directing his massive monthly surplus, around $15,000 a month out of the principal, Dr. Lee erases the entire debt in 17 to 22 months.
Wow, less than 2 years.
Yeah. He saves over $44,000 in interest. But more importantly, he reclaims total psychological control of his cash flow.
Wiping out a massive monthly payment buys serenity. It fundamentally changes your risk tolerance.
Precisely, which highlights another critical mistake professionals make during this vulnerable phase, and that is the 0% down physician mortgage trap.
Oh, this is such a seductive trap. You finally get the big attending contract. The bank offers you a massive house with no money down because of your earning potential, and it feels like you finally arrived.
But buying a house in year one drains $3,500 to $5,000 a month directly from the wealth engine. It cannibalizes the exact capital needed to wipe out the toxic student loans.
So you just delay the debt payoff even longer.
Exactly. By staying a renter for just a couple more years, you preserve your liquidity and direct all your firepower at the debt until the slate is completely clean.
Let's tie all these threads together. If we combine the psychological release valve, the tax shelter stack, and the aggressive debt erasure, it all leads to a very specific life-altering inflection point. Because this highly stringent system isn't a permanent state of living like a resident, it is a temporary sprint.
It is a highly focused 36-month milestone. Let's look at what Dr. Lee's reality is at month 37.
Okay, paint the picture.
The student loans are gone. Consumer debt is gone. The double backdoor Roths and the 401ks are heavily padded and compounding rapidly.
I call this moment escape velocity. Think about a rocket launching into orbit. It burns through the vast majority of its fuel in the first few minutes just to break through the thickest part of the atmosphere and defeat gravity.
That is a great analogy.
Once it's in space, it takes barely any energy to maintain momentum. This 36-month sprint uses massive, automated financial force to permanently break the gravitational pull of compounding debt and lifestyle creep.
And once you achieve that escape velocity, the sudden cash flow unlock is extraordinary. The thousands of dollars of monthly cash flow that were legally owed to lenders are now permanently freed up. The trajectory completely shifts.
Where does it take him?
He is now effortlessly on track for a $6.2 million portfolio by age 60, which is well above his initial baseline target. But the psychological shift is even more profound than the mathematical one.
Because the baseline is set, the constraints are lifted, he's in orbit.
Yes. Stepping up the lifestyle in year four, buying the house, upgrading the car, doesn't feel like a compromise anymore. It feels like true abundance.
That is incredible.
Because the system is already fully funded and the pass is paid for, medicine suddenly becomes a choice. He is practicing because the work is intellectually stimulating and meaningful, not because he has to generate revenue to pay off a luxury lease he signed 3 years ago in a moment of exhaustion.
That transition from obligation to choice is the ultimate return on investment. The overarching philosophy here is clear. Willpower is a finite, unreliable resource, but automation is permanent.
It really is.
Building financial systems that actually respect human behavior by expecting the desire to spend and structuring safely around it is the only reliable way to handle sudden wealth. the mechanics of the 10% upgrade rule, the priority tax stacking, and the 36-month debt sprint aren't about denying yourself the rewards of your hard work. They are about ensuring that the reward isn't temporary.
They are about locking in your freedom.
As we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. If you mapped out your own expected income jumps over the next 5 to 10 years, how much of that future money is already silently assigned to lifestyle upgrades you haven't even made yet? Who gets to your next paycheck first? Your future self or your next recurring bill?